Hi, welcome to BCI Cattle Chat. I'm Brad White, joined today by Philip Lancaster, Bob Larson, and Brian Lubers. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brad.
Hey, Brad. Good morning.
Happy to have you guys with us on this hot, hot summer day. As we think about midsummer, there's lots of stuff going on. One of them is fencing, so we'll talk some about that, as well as fair season coming right up or on top of us in some cases. We'll talk about some of the health concerns that we see in those cattle coming into fair season. And summer pneumonia, a lot of times this affects our pre-weaned calves, and we're going to talk about some of the reasons, the whys, the ins and outs of that. And finally, we'll talk a little bit about a listener question related to net wrap. Before we get into those topics, I wanted to tell you guys, so I got into, and I've told you before, I got into my 16-year-old son's vehicle, and sometimes the radio is on. Well, this time I got in, I'm riding with him, and he's playing music off his phones, and two of his favorite songs are from Marty Robbins and Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Wow, you have raised that child correctly.
You don't see that very often, that those are his two from the 40s and 50s. Those are the songs he's listening to.
There you go. I like that.
So, because we were actually riding together because we were going, because 2 weekends ago, he went with me along with his brothers, and we spent the entire Saturday and part of Sunday building, repairing fence, right?
There's a childhood memory that doesn't go away, doesn't it?
Or even as an adult, you still have that. But he said, after that weekend, he said, next Saturday, I do not want to see any fence. And I said, no problem. So that next Saturday, we put square hay in the barn. So
another great summer memory.
So he told me afterwards, he said, I'm going to be a little more specific next time of so what we
I'm,
need to
I'm do. Guessing spraying thistles is coming up real quick.
No. He covered his bases this time. He said, I want a Saturday off. So we talked about fence, and we're thinking about fence this time of year. It is a good time of year to build fence. And I wanted to ask you guys, there's a difference repairing fence, putting up new fence, but as you think about planning and putting up, let's talk about a new fence first. What's your preference, and what are some of the considerations you have if you're putting up a fence for cows and calves?
Well, a couple of things. I think perimeter, whether we're talking about perimeter or internal fence, may indicate, you know, so the way I was taught was, you know, a good five wire fence as your perimeter. If you've got some interior fences, you may be, but that's going to be relatively expensive. I mean, you've got quite a bit invested in posts and wire. If you've got internal fencing, you may not need quite that as substantial. Depends on the situation. And you might even move to some temporary fencing, like electric fencing and things like that. So, yes, I remember some challenging hot summer days building and repairing fence, but it is really nice to have a good, solid perimeter fence that you don't have to worry about for a while.
Absolutely, and I think there's lots of different kinds you can do. And I wanted to follow up on so let's think about internal fence, rotational grazing. One of the more frustrating things is if you put up electric, trying to figure out why it's not working the way it's supposed to be, right? How do you figure those things out?
Well, I know in my childhood, Brad, it was me walking the fence. So there's the manual way.
Can we call that a foolproof? Is that a foolproof one?
No, it was not.
just keep grabbing it, Brian.
Yeah. So, you know, in our area, challenges we had this time of year, the weeds start to grow up into it. We had a lot of deer growing up. So sometimes it was just as simple as driving along and looking. We didn't have a lot of internal fences. Most of our fence was actually electric fence, but it was wheat pastures. And so, mm-hmm. The temporary fencing, right? But
temporary permanent fence,
right?
Yeah.
There's kind of the big things you look for, right? Is it down or is something touching it? And those are easy to find.
Philip,
listen for the pop.
Yeah.
But there's some testers out there. So I ran a rotational grazing study a few years ago, and we had a tester that would when you put it on the wire and it would give you a direction of where the short is. And so you could walk along and test it and find, okay, so if I went past it, you know, you're it's pointing back the other way, and if you come to a corner or where you've got a splice off of a main wire or something, you can touch the different sides and get some indication of which direction the short is. So if you've got a pretty complex system, it makes it a whole lot easier to figure out where that short is.
Yeah, I think that is a really cool tool, because you can now not just know if it's working or not working, but where the short is coming from. The other thing that I think is useful is putting in some cutoffs. So if you have different sections of pasture that you have on a circuit, for lack of a better word, you can put that cutoff off, and if the fence starts working, you've narrowed down where it is. And those are cheap and easy to actually make cutoff switches, or it's pretty easy to have. It's where it's a handle and it releases, and then you've got that section off. So I think just as you plan it, what you've got to watch is that you just don't have a back feed coming up the backside to where it connects back over. So if you have some single points like that, I think that can make the fence finding of repairs easy. And this is a great time to use it to go through and make sure everything's set up when you do have some time, because it's much easier to make fence repairs or maintenance rather than go back and fix after the cattle have moved where they're not supposed to. So one of the other topics in summertime, and you guys, I know Brian and Bob, you guys have dealt with cattle coming to the fair from a veterinary standpoint. And what we like to do is have the fair health certificate be a fun, easy health certificate. When a kid brings in a steer and you want to look at it, or a sheep or whatever it is, and you say, this is great, we're going to talk about health, we may talk a little bit about that animal. We don't want it to be a bad experience, but there are some things that can make that a lot less fun for both the veterinarian and the 4-H person.
Yeah, as a veterinarian working in a rural community, a lot of times you're asked to check in animals at the fair. And it's you know, with myself and my kids, show to animals in the fair and stuff, and that's a great experience. It's really fun. But those health regulations are there in order to protect everybody, so that we don't have anything that can pass to other sheep or cattle at the fair. And so there's rules, things about ringworm and lice and warts and those types of things that can be contagious. And if you put yourself in everybody's shoes, you've got a young person and their family that's worked really hard on this show animal, and you get to the fair and then the veterinarian doesn't let them show. Or you can look at it from the veterinarian standpoint, is like, gosh, we'd really like every kid to be able to show, but you can't bring this animal onto the premise with other animals because it does have active ringworm or some other problem.
Because those are potential contagious diseases that could go to other animals at the show, which may then go back home, or they may go to other shows or other issues. So let's talk, you brought up two, ringworm and warts. Let's talk a little bit about ringworm. And Brian, I'm going to ask you, because I don't think we talk enough about ringworm, right? We haven't given it its fair due.
I certainly don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. So what causes ringworm, and what are some of the things that I should be on the lookout for?
Sure. So we call it ringworm, which is a little bit of a misnomer, but it's a fungal infection, right? It's a fungal infection of the skin. It's definitely a contagious disease, right? That's why we don't want it coming into the fair. And it affects animals. It can also affect people too, right? So it can be transmitted from the animal to the 4-H'er to the veterinarian that's doing the exam can pick up ringworm. And really the big thing we look for with ringworm is circular patches of lost hair. And so when we get to, and some of them can be quite severe, cover a large percentage of the animal. Sometimes they're very small, you know, a dime size patch where we've lost hair. And that, as a veterinarian, that's what we're looking for when we do that check-in, is if we see animals that have patchy hair loss, it's for us, it's a pretty big indication of ringworm, and that's not going to that's not going to be allowed to show.
And you mentioned cattle, people, but other species as well have ringworm. Yeah, dogs, I mean, it's a fungal infection, easy to transfer back and forth. So that's one that can't come in. If you start seeing some of that, what are anything I can do at home for this?
The treatment for it, it's a little bit of a challenge. The most effective ones are probably topical therapies. So things that we tell people to put on show animals, topical iodine solutions, things like that. But even the treatments, you know, if they're effective against the fungus, it still takes time for the hair to regrow. So it's not something you put on tonight and tomorrow morning you'll be allowed back into the fair. So I think the big thing with all of these kind of contagious diseases that might have a negative show experience, if you notice them early enough, like before I'm showing, start the treatment immediately so that there is a chance they could resolve and then you would be allowed to show that animal. And sometimes it just happens where it's 2 days before the fair and it shows up and then everybody's kind of stuck.
Yeah. What about the other one you mentioned, Bob, was warts. Mm-hmm. So what are warts caused by?
Warts are actually caused by a virus, again, that can pass from one animal to another. A lot of times it's relatively few warts. And again, I think I would agree with Brian. They're slow growing in general. And so that if you can really be aware and examine your animal frequently, you know, weeks and weeks ahead of the fair, and a lot of times those warts can be removed. And then by the time the fair comes along, where that was removed is healed and ready to go. Where you get into trouble is if you really don't check that animal really closely until right before the fair, and then you can get into trouble. So as we're approaching fair season, I think it's important to give those animals the attention they deserve from really looking for these skin lesions and things like that that need to be addressed way before putting them on the trailer to take them to the fair.
And, okay. And one other thing too is both of these diseases can be spread by what we call a fomite, which is any object that touches the ringworm lesion or the wart. And so clippers, grooming tools, halters, all of those things can potentially transmit it from one animal to another animal. So if you have several 4-H'ers in your household at home, that's another thing to be aware of is if you see it in one animal, it probably is a good idea to be disinfecting those things in between animals anyway. But if you see it, certainly then, you know, isolate the animal, disinfect the equipment in between animals, things like that.
So whether it's a halter or clippers or anything that we use or a brush, you can transfer them back and forth. Is that, and that's with both warts and ringworm?
Yep. Potentially.
So keep a lookout for those. Also, as you think about that housing environment where those animals are, if you're in a barn or a shed and there's nice wood posts, they will scratch on those. And that's also a good place to leave those behind. So if you have multiple animals there and you see some signs, something to watch out for. But mostly we're saying watch out and get prepared. I want to ask another question about going to the shows and fairs, and say I'm going to multiple shows. Anything, so these diseases would prevent me from coming in. Any other diseases that you would think about that I should be concerned or prepared for or vaccinate for or try to prevent that I might pick up by going to the shows?
Well, a couple things I think are important is when you return home, your cattle have been out in the world and been exposed to other germs. And so particularly things like pregnant animals, reproducing females, the cows and heifers in the herd, I would not let them come into contact with show animals that have been off the property. And some specific diseases, things like IBR and BVD, those are both viruses that can cause respiratory disease or abortion. And they're common enough that, you know, those are the types of things you might pick up in an environment where you've got cattle from a lot of different herds. So, you know, I enjoy a good cattle show. I think that's a great way to, you know, have some family time, and it's a good way to help raise our kids and, you know, the competition, all of that's fun. But once you come home from the fair or the livestock show, don't just turn those cattle in with the rest of the herd. They need a 30-day quarantine, much like what we would do with new arrivals onto a premise.
So keep them separate, especially from the pregnant animals.
Especially from the pregnant animals, because I'm really concerned about bringing one of these. And IBR and BVD are good examples of oftentimes they'll cause minor respiratory disease in say this young show animal, but they might cause several cows to abort if we put them right in with the pregnant cows. So it's important to just kind of remember that they're, even though they're from my herd, they've been away from the herd for a while. They need to be treated as cattle that are just entering.
Yeah, they went out and about a little bit, and I think a good point there, and probably goes without saying, but that's never stopped me before. But the like clinical illness, if they're clinically sick, like a pneumonia, they can't go to the show. But you made the point on those viruses in particular, you don't have to be clinically sick to still have that virus. So that's why you're saying you can still pick something up. It's not likely, especially in our show animal population, but certainly be cautious and have a great fair and showing season for you and your family. Get prepared early. If you see something odd, the ringworm or the warts we talked about, get it taken care of. I want to switch topics a little bit and talk about, as we think about, and this is an issue, summer pneumonia is something that can be very frustrating because we know that pneumonia in cattle is one of the most frequent disease syndromes that we see. But in pre-weaned cattle, it can be a little bit different. And you can see groups that have cattle that calve in the spring, they may see August, September, they have some issues with those calves. And those calves may have really high numbers of sick cattle, but relatively few of them die. They may have a high fever as they go through the process. And it can be really frustrating because even treating the sick ones may not stop the outbreak or stop the group from spreading. We did some research a few years ago, and about 1 in 5 herds has a problem with summer pneumonia. So if you're listening and you say, well, I've never had an issue with that, you may be 1 of the 4 out of 5 that doesn't. But in the herds that have it, it can be a real problem. You guys have any tips or tricks or things to think about with summer pneumonia?
Well, I think summer pneumonia, so pneumonia in calves that are out suckling their moms, is frustrating from another number of standpoints because they don't have the typical things that cause respiratory risk. You know, so we talk about calves that are trucked, that are commingled with cattle from other herds, that they're weaned, that they're stressed. Those types of things can lead to pneumonia in cattle. Well, these calves don't have any of those risk factors. They haven't left home. They haven't been trucked. They're not coming into contact with other cattle. And yet we're battling some pneumonia. And also, because, you know, we're talking about calves on cows, usually in large pastures, treating them is again, not convenient. They're not near a squeeze chute. We'd have to bring the whole group up, separate the cows off. And so there are some real challenges when you get into one of these situations. But the reality is it probably needs to be addressed. Both the sick calves need to be treated, and sometimes, and again, I wish we had really clear-cut, good, always effective prevention, but sometimes you might institute some vaccinations or plan on, you know, again, trying to pull those sick calves away from the rest of the calves and doing some things that take some work in the middle of the summer.
Well, here's another thing that's different about summer pneumonia is a lot of times when we think about pneumonia in post-weaned calves, it may be a thinner calf or a calf that's not doing as well or a calf that doesn't look as good as the rest of the group. Our summer pneumonia cases, we'll see that sometimes it's the oldest, best doing calf that gets sick, right? Is that what you've seen, Brian?
Yeah, and so I'll come at it from a little bit different perspective. I know a few years ago there was some thought that summer pneumonia might be linked to coronavirus, not COVID-19, but bovine coronavirus. And that is typically the history we get with coronavirus respiratory disease in cattle, is it's well-managed herds, well-vaccinated herds. The fleshiest animals seem to be the most affected. So I think it does fit that pattern, in just kind of as a generalization about coronavirus and summer pneumonias and the link between those two.
Or even viral pneumonia.
Viral period, yeah.
And I've seen some of that research, and we don't know exactly. We think it's a lot of the same pathogens. People have speculated on coronavirus or bovine respiratory syncytial virus, some other viruses that are there. And one of the other thoughts that has come up, so when we talk about the older, better doing calves, if we think about a herd that calves, just to put some dates on it, they calve in March. By the time we get to September, those calves are 6 months old and their maternal immunity is waning or has waned. So the immunity they got from their mother when they were born is basically you get a stock of immunity and then it's going to go down over time while you build your own. Depending on what exposures they've had, there is sometimes a gap there but in the time it takes them to build their immunity and as that immunity goes away. And that's been one of the things that's theorized that maybe plays a role in some of our summer pneumonia. There's been some interesting work done in some of those herds looking at the potential role of immunity and maybe a summer vaccination in those or a pasture turnout pre-weaning vaccination can make sense. Have you guys seen anything on either of those?
I haven't seen anything, but I think we all kind of lean at the viral because the other piece of the history that you mentioned is that you have a lot of animals that get sick, but it doesn't seem to progress like that what we consider typical bovine respiratory disease, the bacterial bronchopneumonia, where, you know, if you leave them alone, they just die. So I think we're all probably pointed the same direction, but exactly which risk factors and exactly which pathogens are involved are still a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And when we looked at some of the risk factors, when we did some studies in collaboration with Mississippi State and Iowa State and Nebraska and Georgia at the time, and when we looked at some of those risk factors, one of the things that we found was if there were, and I'm going to call them grouping factors, or things that had you bring the calves together, creep feeding, intensive grazing, things that are good practices in some circumstance also allow us to, we're not letting them spread out all across the pastures. So I think those can be issues as well. So if you have a summertime pneumonia issue, there are potentially some things you can do, but you can't do them at the time it occurs. You have to do them before, and they're not going to prevent all the cases. But then the other thing that you mentioned, Brian, they can be pretty severe cases, but hopefully we're having relatively low mortality or long-term effects, low death loss and long-term effects. So if you're having some summertime pneumonia issues, that's certainly something to keep an eye on. And you may want to start thinking next year that I want to prepare a little bit earlier and maybe I want to manage the immune profile of my herd a little bit differently to try to gear up for some of those things. So last thing I wanted to talk about, and Philip, I'm gonna turn to you because I think we got a really good question from a listener, and they gave us kind of a case example of a calf that could have a problem and ended up having ingested net wrap. And so when we think about putting up round bales, and we've talked about this a little bit before, round bale wastage in storage can be extreme. And it's less if you use net wrap than if we use like a twine string around it, even though net wrap's a little more expensive. A lot of our net wrap today is kind of a plastic-based item. So is that something that you'd be concerned about cattle ingesting?
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, I would say so. I mean, that depending on, you know, how much they ingest and the size of the particles and stuff, it may not pass out of the rumen very easily. And so you could have a buildup and have kind of a ball of stuff in there. I don't have any experience where we had any cattle die from ingesting it. At the feed yard, when I worked at the feed yard, we ground bales with the net wrap on and fed it that way, without any issues. But we were using a tub grinder with a hammer mill type grinder, and it was tearing it up to very small particles. And of course, those cattle aren't hanging around much longer than, you know, 5-6 months. So, but in a cow-calf situation, I could see that being a different scenario.
I bet, Brian and Bob, I bet you guys have found some interesting things in cows before.
Yes. If you,
They'll eat anything.
They will eat anything. And if you get the opportunity, this kind of get a bunch of veterinarians around telling stories, but yeah, if you get the opportunity to necropsy or cut open a cow, you know, an adult cow that kind of died suddenly, oh, it's amazing what they can have eaten. And big balls of twine or net wrap is one of the ones you run into every once in a while.
Okay.
Hair.
Okay. Yeah. I have a trivia question for you guys. What is the official actual scientific name of a hairball?
Trichobezoar. If you put grass with it, it's a phycotrichobezoar.
That sounds like a dinosaur.
Yeah, it does.
But it's basically, somebody just said, we can't call it a hairball. We have to call it a phycotrichobezoar.
But it's a hairball.
Yeah, it's a hairball.
But so whether it's, twine or net wrap, and again, obviously, some cows are more likely to do it than others. You know, I don't know why that cow eats so much. I mean, why would a cow eat plastic twine? But that one does. And they don't pass.
And there are some individuals that will eat it more than
others. Definitely.
I think some of them get bored. I think they do it out of boredom.
Yeah.
And they'll eat strange, strange things.
So I mean, part of that is, so like if you're talking about cows in the wintertime, saying you're taking bales out and putting them in a bale feeder, I would take the extra effort to remove the twine or net wrap. If you're talking about situations where you're processing the hay, you're running it through a grinder or something like that, I think then it really matters what kind of a grinder, what kind of particle size are you talking about? Because if it leaves it in pretty long strips, I think some cows, calves, whatever, could get into trouble with that.
Well, if you grind it into the diet, it's not just the cows that want to eat it. It's whoever's eating hay. And that stuff's not going to degrade, right? You just hope it'll pass. Mm-hmm. But some of that stuff will stay. I mean, the rumen is set up to kind of filter out some of the stuff that's hard to digest and put it in different spots.
Yeah. So I think you do need to be aware of these plastic net wraps and twine. And where possible, remove them so that the cattle don't eat them, because some of them will.
And anything we can do if we've got one of them that's eating some of that?
Not that I'm aware of. I get the chance. The only time I ever get to see them is when they're dead. I've never successfully treated one that we suspected that as a problem.
Not much you can do at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think avoiding some of that stuff and any of the stuff that you can get around. So plastics, even twines, some of the other, and a lot of our twine, I say twine, a lot of our twine now is plastic, right? So avoiding those as much as possible when you're feeding hay, even if you're grinding hay, I think it's something to keep an eye on. You can have a poor doer and cows will eat a lot of different things. So we've enjoyed having you with us today. And if you have any questions, comments, anything you'd like to send us, you can always send us an email at bci@ksu.edu.